Welcome into the 12th episode of the third season of the Sabermetrics podcast hosted by the Charging Buffalo. My name is Bill. Alongside me as always is Walt. Walt, how you doing, man?
Not doing too well, especially after those past few Sabres games and, you know, last night's game against the Islanders. Definitely some trouble in paradise right now, but we're hanging in there.
We are hanging in there indeed. Before we get to those games, we were going to go over the trades that happened. We were meant to record this past Sunday. Unfortunately, I had to cancel. Something came up. But at this point, we are pretty well beyond the trade deadline, but still wanted to go over them anyway. The first trade that we'll go over, let's get the crappy ones out of the way first. Anders Bjork was traded to Chicago for nothing. Proceeded to put up like 3 points in his first game in Chicago, so that was fun.
Yeah.
look, he didn't have a future here in Buffalo, and I'm sure, you know, he was like, hey, can you trade me? And Kevin Adams is a good guy, and he traded him, and whatever. Good riddance to the Taylor Hall trade that he essentially forced to Boston instead of Vegas, where the Sabres had a better trade in place for him, so that's kind of a bummer. The other one is Rasmus Asplund. He went to Nashville for Nashville's 7th-round pick in 2025. So, essentially nothing. I mean, look, they got a pick back, but essentially nothing. Any parting words?
We called it the last podcast, too.
Yeah, that's
remember,
right.
Remember, we were talking about how he's a little overvalued. I think he's going to get like a Torrey Mitchell return with a 5th-round pick. Yep. End up getting a little less than that. But, yeah, I mean, really not much value for players like him that don't get a lot of ice time.
No, not at all. And I mean, that's a good pickup for Nashville if they're looking for that defensive kind of forward. It's just he was essentially anemic offensively, unfortunately. So that's kind of I don't want to say it's a waste of a second round pick. What was he, the first pick in the second round years ago by Tim Murray? But
yeah, he was up there.
That's tough to watch go. But at the same time, I mean, look, he wasn't playing, and the players that are on the roster now are. Most of them are going to be part of the future. So, you know, it kind of got phased out, and we need to get used to players that, you know, maybe we don't necessarily want to see go get phased out. Kind of like Josh Bloom, who got traded for Riley Stillman. Firstly, if you have any parting words for Anders Bjork and Rasmus Asplund, I mean, I just wish them all the best, and hopefully they can stick around in the league and be fun to play against them. But then definitely the Josh Bloom to Riley Stillman trade, just because mostly like it was a social media kind of like everyone was upset social media wise because they're like, no, yeah. Mr. Bloom, we can't talk to you on Twitter anymore.
Yeah,
so
no. That's
kind of a bummer. But frankly, I mean, Riley Stillman does bring something that the Sabres were lacking, frankly. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on those three trades first, and then we'll get to the other two that occurred.
The Bjork and Asplund deals, I mean, they're pretty much just like whatever. I mean, I don't really think either player had any future in Buffalo beyond this season. And even this season, they weren't even really playing that much. And the Josh Bloom one, I mean, seemed like a fantastic kid. I know his dad like was always looking at Charging Buffalo content and whatnot, always interacting with other Sabres fans on Twitter. So it definitely hurts to lose Josh and Mr. Bloom. But you know, I think when you could get a guy like Riley Stillman, I think it doesn't matter as much when you have to give a prospect of Josh Bloom's caliber up. I think he's kind of a prospect you may be more willing to move for a guy that can be a part of your team now. And I think with Riley Stillman, we've definitely seen in this first few games here, he kind of brings an element that wasn't on the Sabres blue line. Not afraid to get into fights, not afraid to dish out hits. And that's definitely something that the Sabres, at least with them, with their depth defensemen, they've been lacking just in terms of size and physicality. So he fills in that role. I think he's been doing he's been doing a pretty solid job in his first few games. I mean, obviously he had that knockout against Tampa where he's been out ever since, but yeah. The guy's got that dog in him.
He does have that dog in him. The second he grabbed onto, is it Janot? Is his last name Janot? Tanner Janot?
Yeah.
The second he grabbed on, he just didn't have the grip. Like, Janot had complete range of his right hand, and Stillman just like, that's why I was trying to explain it to someone that doesn't watch hockey as much, is like, that's why those guys circle and circle and kind of like you know, pump fake each other, because that initial grip that you have on someone's jersey can, as we saw, like if you don't have a good grip and this guy can just start swinging. And Janot, I mean, he's got those heavy rights too. I think that's something that a lot of people that know him, you know that he can really throw him. And Stillman just didn't have the grip. And like Donnie said, you know, adrenaline kind of took over. It was tough to see, but you know what? I mean, look, it's not going to happen every single time he gets in a fight. So,
It's scary though watching him fight though, because I feel like, I mean, he obviously, props to him for going out there, but that guy takes hits to the head like nobody I've ever seen before. Yep. Like he's got to learn how to kind of muddy things up a little bit and try to sneak a shot in versus just trying to go all out and like just exchanging blows back and forth. That's high-risk fighter.
High-risk fighter for sure. I'm just going to reiterate the second he grabbed onto him and that you could see like the grips that each player had, you're like, uh-oh. It doesn't bode well for him. Hopefully he can get out of this. And he didn't. So, I mean, hopefully it sounds like he's okay. So that's, you know, we can slightly joke about it. I don't know. Hey, if you're going to drop the gloves in the National Hockey League, you're tough as nails. So at least you have my respect, even if it doesn't go all that well. But we have two more trades to talk about. Let's first start with the Portillo trade. He was traded to LA for a third round pick. I'd probably guess their pick's going to be in the late 70s, early 80s, maybe overall. I want to reiterate that he was drafted by the Sabres as an overager, 67th overall, which was the fifth pick in the third round, if I'm not mistaken, back in 2019. Obviously, Kevin Adams made it. We all kind of knew this anyway, but he confirmed, like, yeah, he's not coming here. So I think that's a good pickup. Like you got a draft pick for him. I know you get, I think it's like a late third if he doesn't sign, like those college guys, if he doesn't sign, like if Ryan Johnson didn't sign or something like that, you get like a late third. I'm not 100% sure on that.
I think with Portillo, there's no compensation. Ah. I'm only first round pick. So
with him.
I mean, it's pretty much whatever you can get. So
gotcha. Well, look at me learn on the fly.
Which I don't know why. I don't know why, like, especially with that being a problem with NCAA guys not signing, I don't know why there's not compensation outside the first round. I mean, it's kind of crazy to me, but.
Well, I mean, look, the Sabres were able to get a third round pick for him.
Yeah, pretty much got the compensation better than it would have been if it was in place. So.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's look, he was like, I don't really see a pathway forward here. And it's like, well, if you don't really want to.
Decision, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't, like...
what he said?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's, a business decision. I mean, the business decision is,
NBA
like,
guy.
He wasn't drafted by Kevin Adams. Kevin Adams specifically traded for Devon Levi. I mean, and what, they were both probably going to end up in Rochester next year, and he's probably looking at the writing on the wall, like, I'm not going to get the preferential treatment here because Levi is the guy. You can make fun of him for not wanting to, you know, take on that challenge or whatever, but... Part of me is like, I get it. I do. It still sucks. Like, you lost a prospect, but at least they got a pick back. So, look, you know, hopefully he does well. Hopefully he can start whatever business he's trying to start or whatever. I don't know. Whatever. Good luck in L.A. Sounds like they have their work cut out for them on the goaltending side of things anyway. So, best of luck to him, I guess. Not really much else to say there. And then the last trade, Jordan Greenway. I almost called him Jonathan, which is just not great. Jordan Greenway was traded from Minnesota, and going out from the Buffalo was the second round pick that the Sabres had from Vegas in the Eichel trade, and a 2024 fifth round pick. That second round pick I just referred to is this year's 2023, and then obviously a fifth round pick 2024. What do you think about that price? Do you think they overpaid? Do you think it's about right? What do you think?
I mean, just in terms of what I thought he would cost prior to the trade happening, it's definitely more expensive than I thought it would be. I guess the good thing is that the Sabres have a bunch of second round picks. So, I mean, before the pick they even traded even, so they'll be able to get the guys they wanted in that range anyways. So fifth round pick doesn't really mean too much. So I think if you want the guy, I don't think it's a crazy price to pay for him, but I would say it's a little bit more than I thought he'd go for.
That's where I'm at, too. It's more than I thought he would go for, but you're trading probably your latest second round pick. They have the Flyer second round pick from the Risto trade. They have their own second round pick. And then they have Vegas's. Vegas is doing pretty well this year. So that's going to be later on in that second round. So look, I mean, if this is someone you really genuinely believe is going to help your team, it sounds like more of like a reclamation project. I think I nailed that. But look, let's be honest. We trust Granato over probably any other coach that's been in the Sabres system for a very long time to be able to get the most out of him. And he's known him. I think you can kind of tell in the past couple of games he's still trying to work his way in. I think they said he's only had like one pregame skate with the team, hasn't even had a practice. And with their insane schedule coming up, I don't expect them to have too many practices. So honestly, for the rest of the year, I'm not looking for too much from Greenway. To be completely honest, I like, you know, get in there, get physical, you know, just try to do your best out there and fill in. I mean, he was bouncing around lines all over the place. So I'm not really putting too much stock into the rest of the season for Greenway. And anything good that he does for me personally is just kind of gravy. I just expect him to be a fourth liner and hopefully he can contribute here and there. But yeah, I mean, what do you see his role being? Because he was bouncing up all and down the lineup. Where do you think he'll finally end up slotting in? And who do you think they take out of the lineup? I understand, especially when Alex Tuch comes back, we don't really know when he's going to come back, but there's going to be some decisions that have to be made. If Tuch comes back and Greenway's still in the lineup, like, is Paterka sitting longer? Are they finally going to pull out Olofsson, which is, you know, people have been calling for? What's your take on that? You know, it's starting to become a little bit of a logjam. And I think we need to be prepared as Sabres fans to have guys get sat that we don't want to get sat or traded that we don't want to get traded because of the depth that they have. And there are so many players. Like, at some point, they might trade, I don't know, a year or two down the road, they might trade Noah Östlund because they see, you know, something that they don't necessarily see how he could fit in or whatever. But there's going to be a lot of people that are like, what? He's still a really good prospect. Why are we trading him? That's just kind of an example. But we used to be like, yeah, just trade whoever and whoever comes in, whatever. Like, the team wasn't good. But now that they are, there's, you know, there's a lot more chess being played when it comes to creating a roster and a lineup. So what's your thought process on where Greenway could fit into this team?
I think probably fourth liner. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what Granato does with him exactly, because his first two games, I think we kind of saw what we've been seeing with him in Minnesota, where you see the guy, he's huge, he wins puck battles. I mean, there's so much to like about what his game could be, but what his game actually is now is just like a very incomplete, like, yeah, you don't really know what exactly his role is type of game. He's not really your typical fourth line guy. He's not skilled enough to be the type of player it seems like he wants to be offensively. So you're kind of just caught with this guy that's a little bit in the middle, but he absolutely has the frame to be a dominant, like, fourth line, like, banger type guy out there. But I guess we'll see with him. I mean, with how he fits in the lineup, I guess it depends how long Alex Tuch is out for. I mean, obviously, I'd want to see Paterka back in the lineup because I think his development's just way too important to sit him for the majority of the remainder of the season. Maybe we see a guy like Hinostroza sit. Maybe a guy like Olofsson, which I do not think we'll probably ever see, at least this season.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think – I don't know. I mean, I haven't been too impressed in the first two games, but that's not a good period of time to judge a player. I do think maybe Don Granato can get something out of him, but it's going to be interesting to see what exactly Granato's vision is for what Greenway can become on this team moving forward.
Yeah, I will say he has gotten himself in front of the net, and there's, you know, making it, you know, it's tough for goalies to try to look around such a big body, but you're right. I mean, it hasn't been overly impressive, but again, he hasn't really like practiced or even taken like pregame skates with these guys. And
yeah,
he's coming from a situation where not only Greenway was struggling, but Tyson Jost, he was really struggling in Minnesota too. So I don't want to say they break forwards, but it's one of those things where he might need to get out of some bad habits or, you know, kind of like a mental space of where he was to where he is now. And I don't know. That's kind of why I said I don't really put too much stock in the rest of this season for him. Now, if he's a straight up detriment, then we need to talk. But I don't think it's that. But it's also not like, oh, wow, look at this guy go. So it's, you know, it is what it is, and give it some more time. So I'm not going to judge him too harshly on anything he does. And You know, you can definitely see the size, the speed, and you can see him like there is some skill there, but it's not fully rounded out. And maybe that's just, you know, if he gets on the right line and starts generating some chemistry with, I don't know, Peyton Krebs and Casey Mittelstadt or something like that. I mean, maybe you can see something there. So, you know, let's kind of move off Greenway. I think it was a good ad, a little bit pricey, but the Sabres could afford it, so who cares? I think it was a good trade for him. So let's, oh God, here we go. Let's move on to these games. 5-3 against Columbus. So I'm going back since our last episode. Tuesday after our last episode, 5-3 against Columbus. That was tough. I mean, that's the
Yeah,
worst
that's
team
a
in the
rough
league.
loss.
That's the worst team in the league. You got to win those games. 7-1 against Boston. I mean, I didn't really like watching them kind of fall apart there at the end and kind of leave UPL out to dry. But I mean, look, it's Boston. You know, like they're the cup favorites for good reason. They're insanely good, and at the deadline, they added so many good players at the deadline too. It's absolutely wild. So, you know, good for them. At some point, they'll fall off. So I'm just praying on that to be sooner rather than later. The Sabres actually got a win. Actually got a win. 5-3 against the Lightning on Saturday. Followed it up with a good game. At least a good first period. A good game against the Oilers. They lost 3-2. And then last night, I know I've been becoming a bigger fan of soccer, but the Sabres ended up losing 3-2 on a goal, which I will say, my first initial reaction, I tweeted it out, was before any replay came up, and I genuinely thought Fasching lifted his leg to stop the puck, and then they show the replay, and you're like, oh, dude. I mean, that's very clearly his leg's off the ice, and it's moving forward, and the puck goes directly off his leg and into the goal. So, I mean, I went from, yeah, I'd call that a goal, to, oh, you slow that down. That is completely different than what I saw live. And it just, like, the angle, just, it, I didn't see his leg move forward. And the second I saw the replay, I was like, oh, crap, I'm not right. So I was wrong on that. And it was called no goal on the ice. And they decided there was enough there to overturn that call. I disagree. I'm not going to start yelling, screaming about it and whatever, but I want to get your take on that because I went from, yeah, that's a good goal. Like you just, you know, inadvertent lifting his leg and then you slow it down. And you're like, ooh, that's seems like it wasn't, I wouldn't say a kicking motion, but he definitely, I mean, whether he meant to or not, it was definitely, he moved his leg forward towards the goal and directed the puck into the net that way. So, what's your take on it?
I mean, I'd say for me, I think I had the opposite approach to that goal. I thought when it first happened, just seeing it live, I was like, oh, he definitely kicked that in.
Okay.
And then I think I saw the replay and I saw a little bit like it looked like he kicked it in, but not like a distinct kicking motion. It looked like he could have just been moving foot. I mean, it was such a weird goal that's like right on the fringe of like what
Yeah.
would be determined a goal or no goal. Like, it stinks that it came down to a game that really mattered a lot for both teams. I mean, at least it happened in the regular season and not the playoffs,
That's
but
true.
definitely a rough way to end the game. And I think I'd probably be like a little bit more upset with that goal happening if the Sabres played like a really good game like they did against Edmonton. But the fact they got
Yeah.
absolutely
Yeah.
blown out of the water, like chance wise, by the Islanders, like
Yeah.
Islanders just
God.
completely looked like the better team by like a mile that game. I mean, Sabres were lucky that it was 2-2 at that point in the game. They're lucky
Yeah.
they only gave up 3 goals. They're lucky they scored two on a guy like Sorokin with the chances they had. So I don't know. I mean, brutal way to end the game, but also I think just a brutal performance by the Sabres team that is supposed to be able to step it up at this point in the year. I mean, I know going into the season, we didn't really expect them to get to this point, so it's going to be a beautiful season no matter what happens in regards to the playoffs. But just with all the momentum they build up to drop that one in New York is kind of rough.
I mean, they're just the most just the crappiest team to watch play hockey. I mean, we've been watching the Sabres all season, and they're one of the most fun teams in the NHL, if not the most. It really just depends on your opinion. But you do that to go down there and big, huge game, huge implications. This would really help with the games that they have in hand. To watch that where I was half asleep in the middle of the second period.
Yeah, I know.
And it was just... Again, they didn't.
I'd love to go to Wegmans like, with like 5 minutes left in the third period. I was like, I got to go to the grocery store. I can't stay up any later.
Yeah, that's right. And it's just, look, I mean, I don't believe, like, they didn't deserve to win the game, frankly. I think Islanders just played better in their crappy, boring ass system that they have. But that's why I'm not too tweaked about it, because it's like, I mean, I would have preferred that they were able to get it to overtime and get a point out of it. But. Yeah, like you mentioned, like they were kind of lucky to be in that position anyway, so it is what it is. But I do want to point out, Brian Koziel put out this, asking, was this rule applied properly? And I'm going to read it right now. Please excuse me. Rule 78.5, parentheses I, so I don't really know what that means, but when the puck has been directed, batted, or thrown into the net by an attacking player other than with a stick. So that's just kind of setting the premise. When this occurs, if it is deemed to be done deliberately, then the decision shall be no goal. The goal cannot be scored when the puck has been deliberately batted with any part of the attacking player's body into the net. How do you read that? Did he deliberately bat it? See, that's the thing. Like, he deliberately raised his leg, but it was deliberately, like, to the point of, like, trying to knock down the puck instead of direct it into the goal. And that's where, like, the gray zone is. Like, everyone's going to have an opinion on this. Some people are going to be like, dude, you're wrong. Or some people are going to be like, yeah, you're right. It's just kind of polarizing in that sense. But, I mean, hearing that definition of the rule, does that, you know, kind of sway your opinion on things? I can read it again if you need to, or shoot it over to you, but it's kind of up for interpretation. The thing is they called it no goal on the ice, then they took forever to review it, and then they thought it was substantial enough to overturn the call. I mean, I can make an argument for both sides too, which is kind of like not what Sabres fans want to hear, but do we think that they followed this rule to a T? Do you think it was kind of like some gray zone? Like, I'm just, this will be the last thing we talk about it, but I'm just trying to, I don't know, make some Sabres fans feel better, because it doesn't look great, but also the rules are the rules kind of thing. Like, he didn't deliberately kick it, which that's something they were saying on the broadcast. They were like, yeah, well, he didn't like kick it with his skate. And I'm like, well, that shouldn't be like your one thing where it was like, oh, well, it was off his shin, so it's all good. Like, well, that's not what I'm going for here, but is that rule definition kind of change things for you, or are you standing pat like, no, it was a good goal?
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, based off definition, I could definitely see why it's a goal, just because I think intent.
Yeah.
When you have like a giant rubber puck flying at you, is kind of like a gray area, because you're moving so many parts of your body, and it's not that easy to hit it with one specific part or control like where the puck will land after it hits you. So I don't know what he was trying to do there. I know he put both hands on the stick like right as the puck was coming towards him, and he obviously had to move his foot and his skate at some point, because he wasn't really just going to stand still in that area. So it's just so hard, because I mean, I just don't know how in that situation you can know what a guy's intent was. Like, intent could have been to hit it with the stick and it missed him. And
I think my understanding was his intent was to knock down the puck and then try to like get, and he was like moving his leg to hopefully make sure it doesn't go flying past him.
Yeah.
That was my understanding.
So it's like, is it an intent to score?
Yeah.
Like, is that what the intent is? Like, he's trying to redirect it to, like, I don't get where the... It's a weird, weird rule.
I mean, all Sabres fans are going to say that's no goal, and all Islanders fans are going to say, nope, that's a goal. And look, I mean, at the end of the day, like, I'm sorry, but they didn't deserve to win that game. They just didn't. So I wish they did.
Yeah.
Of course I wish.
I'd be a lot more upset, too, if it wasn't Hudson Fashing. I'd be a lot more upset. I'm a big Hudson. I'll always be a big Hudson Fashing guy.
I'm pretty sure I was there for his first NHL goal. against Winnipeg.
Oh, against the Jets?
Yeah, he like drove the net and like tucked it home. And I was like, no freaking way. Let's go. Hudson Fashing. This is the dude. And he was not the dude. I mean, hey, good for him. He's, you know, I think he was called up.
Carving out a role with the Islanders. Yeah, this year. So,
look, good for him. It seems like if he was going to carve out a role with a team that's like actually good, not like Arizona or like Vancouver or something like that, where they're just like, oh, you can play in the NHL, come on through. Like, I'm glad it's with like a team that would more fit his style. It's not a style I enjoy watching, but hey, look, it if it wins you games, it wins you games. So that's our take on the Islanders goal, no goal fiasco. I mean, I'm sure people aren't going to be exactly happy to hear what we were basically saying. Like, we think it's still a goal, but I do understand where people are coming from saying, look, that's a kicking motion, or he was moving his leg forward, he lifted off the ice. I can make an argument both ways, and that doesn't make for great like radio or podcast, because you really need to be like definitive and like Skip Bayless, just like stick by your guns kind of thing. But like, I can make an argument both ways, so I'm not going to harp on it anymore. Let's move on to the games that the Sabres have coming up. So we're recording this Wednesday night. They have Dallas coming in tomorrow, then the Rangers coming in on Saturday, then they go off to Toronto on Monday, they go down to Washington on Wednesday, and then next Friday, March 17th, they are in Philadelphia to play the Flyers. Sunday the 19th, the Bruins come to town. Let's first address, this team is just not good at home. And especially if they're wearing royal, I think I'm going to botch this, and it's going to take me a second to find it, but I think they're like 4-12 and...
It's on the Charging Buffalo Instagram. I'll pull it up.
Yeah, it is not good. It is not good. Like, I can
understand. I think it's 8-1 at home in the Goatheads, 5-16-2 at home without the black and red Goatheads.
And I'm sorry, but, like, you can't do that at home and then be like, well, where is everyone on a Wednesday night when it's freezing cold at 7:30? It's like, well, you guys, there's a good chance you guys aren't going to win. Like, I've had the opportunity. I was almost going to go to one of the games this week. And I just kind of, like, just decided. I was like, look, I mean, I have, like, a couple – busy couple weekends coming up, and you know, work's been kind of crazy, so that was another reason to not go. But I was like, I don't know if these guys are going to even show up and play the way they should, because like, they'll play just fine when they're on the road, but for some reason when they're home, I just don't get it. I mean, can you make any sense of their woes at home? Because it's upsetting. You'd rather see your team crush it at home, and then when they go on the road, you're like, oh god, come on guys, let's really try to get one here. But it's like, no, when they go off and play off in, you know, the Pacific, you know, standard time, where games are starting at 10:30, they're doing just fine. It just, it's confusing. It's annoying. Do you have any kind of thoughts on it? I don't really have any reason why. I think they might just grip their sticks a little bit too tight and, you know, heavy legs maybe. I just don't know. I really don't get it.
I mean, part of that I feel like maybe just comes down to being unlucky. Like, I also think it kind of takes into account like how some statistics we look at with hockey players, where like when this guy's on the ice, they win X amount of games and whatnot, like how some stuff like that could have little to no correlation with actual wins, like just with like the jersey, that jersey stat. Like, I mean, obviously just looking at the number on the surface, it's like, oh, they play better when they wear these jerseys. But maybe it just boils down to being lucky in those and unlucky in other jerseys. I mean, it's definitely a strange phenomenon. I think the fact that their attendance is improving but still isn't the greatest for a lot of games, especially those non-black and red Goathead games, I think maybe that's why they don't really get that home ice advantage that most other teams in the league get. Because, I mean, I know for some of the Sabres road games in some cities, like whenever they're in Boston or cities with a team that's a contender, I mean, those arenas get rowdy, even on like a Tuesday night. I mean, you could just feel the energy, feel the vibes. With the Sabres, we've maybe gotten that a few games this season when they play at home. Like when they play a weeknight game at home, usually, I don't know, the energy's just not there for either on the ice or in the crowd. It's just not really that home ice advantage you're looking for.
I kid you not, I pulled up the NHL website to kind of, you know, move along and talk about some specific players. The first thing on the NHL website, it's a picture of the boys and the Goatheads, Tage Thompson, Alex Tuch, and Rasmus Dahlin. The caption, Sabermetrics. I kid you not, it says Sabermetrics right there. Oh, I just pulled it up. That's pretty funny. I like that a lot.
Stealing our vibe.
Yeah. Well, well, well. How the turntables. Yeah. So like I said, I mean, yeah, it's just a weird phenomenon, especially because like if they were, I don't know, like 500 in their Goathead jerseys, but like they're 8-1 in them. And then the other ones, you guys stink. What is going on? That's such a weird phenomenon, like you said. And I mean, Someone asked Don Granato, like either during an intermission or during a game, they're like, you kind of stink at home. What's up? And he was like, if you find out, let me know. Like, he doesn't get it either. And so I'm sure the players don't either. I'm sure they're frustrated. I don't know. I just hope, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm hoping that next year is just better at home, because I think next year is really when they can start really getting consistently middle of the week, 7:30, 8 o'clock start times. I still think they can get a lot of butts in seats with how they've performed this year and just the natural progression that people are expecting of them. So,
yeah, I mean, just season tickets, those going to be like the biggest thing with increasing attendance, is that when you have a bunch of people buying season tickets, they're pretty much forced to go to the games or try to sell them on a secondary market. And if they don't sell for the box office price, they have to sell them for even cheaper. And that's how you get $5 tickets. And then the people will fill in those seats for the season ticket holders that can't go. That's really what they got to get at to get that attendance up again, is they just got to get those season ticket holders numbers up. And I do think they're going to get a lot more season ticket holders next year with how fun they've been this year. I mean, not at home exactly, but they had a ton of fun games in the Goathead uniforms. Yeah. Good on the road, Tage Thompson, Dahlin. So I think we'll see a much bigger uptick in those season ticket holder numbers next year. And usually that leads to an uptick in attendance as well.
And I mean, this is something I've reiterated a couple times recently. I mean, we've kind of been saying it all year, but specifically recently with people kind of like, no playoffs, we need to go, like, go for it. Especially like trying to like scheme up all of these massive trades. Oh, we can talk about the chicken thing in a second, but this is just the beginning. And I mean, people in Buffalo, they're smart. They get it. They understand hockey and they understand where this team is. And I mean, they realize like, look, this is just the beginning, and you know, let's try to get in now on season tickets, stuff like that, and we'll see where this team is in a couple of years. So I can understand that too. I'm hoping you know, people are, you know, excited to get tickets, or you know, sign up for season tickets, or you know, mini packs or whatever it is. I'm definitely going to try to, you know, now that I live in Buffalo, get there a little bit more. I hate to say it for me, but like weeknights are just tough for me. I got to be up early and like on the ball real early, and it's just kind of, it's tough to make those weekday games. But next year I'm definitely going to try to make a concerted effort to do so. But let's, you know, do we want to talk about, let's talk about the chicken trade for a second. Kevin Adams, essentially, shout out to Lance for being able to ask it in a way where he's not specifically saying Chychrun, but making Kevin Adams like, hey, this is who I'm asking about. So shout out to Lance. Definitely not shout out to his partner in crime over there at the Buffalo News. Screw that guy. The Chychrun trade to Ottawa, everyone was like, no way, we could have afforded that. I had this feeling, man, I really wish I said this publicly, but I had a feeling, I was like, and a lot of other people kind of echoed the same thing. So it's easy for me to say this now, but I really genuinely thought, I was like, they've got to be looking for one of Quinn, Peterka, Savoy, Kulich. I'd say that's about it. I don't really want to add anyone else there. Maybe Levi? I don't know. Feels like Levi would be kind of like a weird trade in that. And if I'm the Sabres, I'm shutting down any kind of deals for Devin Levi. Suck it, Montreal fans. That was my favorite discourse for like a week and a half on Twitter, where Montreal was like, I think we can get Devin Levi. It's like, okay, good luck. I mean, like,
they have UPL, they're trading Levi.
No, that is
their argument.
It's a bad argument. Let's just say that. what was your initial take when you saw that trade go through? And I mean, I for me, it was just like, look, this is just the beginning for the Sabres. Don't overpay. And Kevin Adams was like, look, there's a limit that I'm not going to go over. And to a point, I respect it. To another point, it's just like, hey, man, sometimes you have to, do something that's a little uncomfortable and pay a little bit more. I guess he kind of did that with Greenway in a sense, but he was really confident, and obviously Granato was pounding the table for him. I tried to pound the table. I don't think the mic picked that up, and I probably would have broke everything on my desk anyway. But it's what was your reaction to the Chychrun trade? Because I was just kind of like, dang, good deal for Ottawa, but when it made a lot of sense when Kevin Adams was like, look, they were asking for more than what they ended up getting. I was like, all right, well, screw it. Let Ottawa take him, and we'll move on with the pieces that we kept without trading him. I can also make an argument for, hey, sometimes you need to pull the trigger. So, what was your thought process there? And do you think that the Sabres should have pulled the trigger, or they did the right thing and held firm?
I mean, I thought it was decent value for Ottawa, but I feel like their entire premise of the rebuild, I feel like, is like when you're 19 and you got that one friend who's like older brother's like 24, 25. He like drinks all the time, like parties, does all this stuff. You think he's really cool. And then you realize that in like 2 years, 3 years, this guy's probably going to be in rehab or something. That's kind of how I see the Senators. It's kind of how I see the rebuild right now, honestly. I mean,
What a hot
it's
take.
very cool what they're doing right now. I mean, they're trading for guys like Claude Giroux. He's older. They got Chychrun and they trade for DeBrincat, but a lot of these guys that they have there right now, I mean, like, there's no guarantee they're going to sign long term. They're pretty maxed out in terms of what they have in their prospect pool. Their prospect pool, I believe, in the Athletic was ranked number 23 by Scott Wheeler just a few weeks ago. They traded their first round pick again. They traded 7th overall pick in the last draft for Alex DeBrincat. They're just like, they're living fast now, but it's going to catch up to them in a few years. And I do not think that's something that a team like the Sabres should look up to. I mean, the Sabres right now, they're that young 19-year-old looking up to that 25-year-old that's drinking and partying all the time. But sometimes at 19, you just got to sit back and realize that things are going all right for you right now. And if you stick to the process, you're going to get somewhere even better. So that's my take on Ottawa and their rebuild.
What a great take. I love that so much. I'm gonna have to try to, I'll try to clip it. Who knows? But that's a good one. I like that a lot. I think it's, and again, this is why I was almost upset on our last episode, where I was basically saying, like, Kevin Adams has told you what he's doing. He's not gonna overextend himself. He's not gonna try to speed up whatever they're doing. And then it wasn't a huge quantity, but there were people out there like really upset. And it's like, guys, he told you, he gave you the game plan. And then you're going to get mad at him when he stuck to said game plan. Like, and this is
Nah, I
just,
thought he was kidding.
yeah, right. Yeah. Like, don't try to call his freaking bluff when he's been repeating the same thing for over a year now. I mean, again, I can make the argument for, like, hey, man, like, reward your team and, reward your fans. It's the longest playoff drought or whatever, but, like, it's the longest playoff drought regardless, like, if they make it this year or next year. So, like, they're looking for sustained success. Like, this wouldn't be the case, but I'm 100%, and everyone else would. I'm really picking low hanging fruit here, so. But like I would 100% rather take them making the playoffs 5 years in a row or going deeper in them than making the playoffs this year and then maybe making it next year, maybe making it the year after because they really overextended themselves. Frankly, I don't think that would be the case if they made one big splash like a Chychrun trade, but understand where I'm coming from. Like he gave you the blueprint, he stuck to the blueprint. Don't get mad at him for it. And so, I mean, I think it was a good trade deadline for Adams. They got a couple pieces in Stillman and Greenway, whether you like them or not, where like it's you can reward the team in a way that's like, look, you have a couple guys out there that are bruisers that are, they'll kind of take over that part. Because no matter how much you enjoy analytics and skill and all these things, you still need some players that can go out there and throw the body. Now, the biggest thing is those players can't be a detriment. They can't be going chasing hits all over the place and screw over their team. But at the same time, how many two-on-ones has this team given up? I mean, it's 17 times a period. Like, every single time there's a chance to pinch, the Sabres are pinching. So, look, it's also a system-based thing, too, where, like, some of these bigger, bulkier guys that are throwing hits and stuff like that, you know, maybe they find their way in this system with Granato that, especially with Stillman, I'm really referring to Stillman, Greenway in a sense, too, because he was struggling, but Stillman, like, Vancouver fans were like, holy crap, this is, like, a day to celebrate, like, the day that Risto got traded, but... Look, I mean, it's a different system, and he might be able to adapt better to what's going on here. Because, look, Vancouver's a tire fire. You know, not every single player on Vancouver is a bad player, but a lot of them have bad stats. And so it's just kind of the way it goes. I'm kind of talking myself into a circle.
They kind of remind me. Yeah, they remind me of like kind of like the Sabres teams of a few years ago. Kind of like how it's like this team has a lot of talent, but
they just suck.
It's really just like... Yeah, every guy puts up bad numbers individually, and then they get traded. They look better elsewhere, like Beauvillier. I mean, Beauvillier went to Vancouver, got better numbers there, so I guess he's kind of the opposite of that. But, I mean, even in the Buffalo area, we've had guys like that. Like, Anders Bjork came to Buffalo. He looked awesome for a few games. I mean, but then we see, like, I mean, guys like Brandon Montour. Everyone in Buffalo wanted him out. Like, I'm not comparing him to Riley Stillman at all, two completely different skill sets, but everybody wanted him out of Buffalo. He looked like a horrible defenseman here, not someone that fit. And now he's on Florida, and every single time I watch the Panthers, I'm like, this guy is insane with just how he plays in that system. So I think that system fit, I think that's kind of what the Sabres are going for with these deadline additions. That's kind of why I don't really like bringing up, like, RPM charts or like the Jay Fresh charts about like being like, oh, they got this guy, he sucks, or like, oh, they should have traded this guy, that's like a 97% war, even though he's playing fourth liners on for the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's like, at some point, the Sabres have a pretty solid analytics department, but at some point, a lot of the depth guys, it matters more that they're a fit for the system versus
Like
some
good
RPM charter stuff sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes.
Absolutely. No, I mean, I agree. And it is more system-based. You know, like sometimes you can just see players that just don't do – like look at Dahlin and – oh, my God, I almost said Granato system. Look at Dahlin and Kruger system. Look at pretty much the entire team in Kruger system. Like, it really does matter system-based-wise. And especially, like – like, they were lost under Kruger because they're like, what are you talking about? Like, it was just horrible roster management, lineup management. I mean, it was just a horrible roster in general. But he also, like, players either didn't buy in or they didn't fully understand what they were trying to do. And some players were doing it and some players weren't. I mean, I'm not going to rehash all of that. But it really is system-based. So, again, I have the confidence in Granato to get the best out of Stillman and Greenway. So... Look, I mean, again, they add an element to this lineup that the Sabres kind of needed. I'm not someone that's like, go pound their face in all the time, but, I mean, Riley Stillman absolutely lit up Ian Cole. And, I mean, look, does that really help the guys that, you know, like the Peyton Krebs on the bench or the, you know, the J.J. I almost called him J.J. Quinn. Oh, God. Jack Quinn or J.J. Paterka. Like, does that really help them? No, but at the same time, like, it kind of takes a target off their back a little bit. Do you agree with me there? Where, like, if you get some other guys that can get in there and, like, Greenway or Stillman. Greenway is not much of a fighter. I don't think Stillman really is either, but yeah, they will do it. Does it kind of help them out where, like, teams can kind of run around chasing them a little bit more because they're the ones dishing out the body instead of them, like, you know, holding on to Tage Thompson all game long or you know, trying to bully Dahlin or... trying to bully some of these younger guys like Krebs, Olofsson, you know, some of the smaller guys, Quinn, Paterka. Like, do you kind of subscribe to that where, you know, it is kind of effective to have those players in there because they can kind of take targets off more of the skilled players' backs? Or is it just like, look, I mean, it's just part of the game kind of thing?
I mean, I think it definitely takes attention away from – you know, some of the guys you don't really want the attention going towards, especially now that players like Dahlin kind of get like more aggressive with it. And I think they're really trying to build kind of towards that New Jersey model next year, where they're just going to try to get much better at killing the play defensively before it starts and really having their forwards help out defensively as well, just to kickstart the attack. I think that's the next step the Sabres have to make in order to become a more effective team, and really adding that forechecking element as well, which a guy like Greenway, he's fantastic at puck retrievals. He makes it seem almost effortless. I think maybe we see guys like Stillman and Greenway kind of be like the first two experimental guys to kind of try to start instilling the systems they're going to try to use next year to take that next step. I mean, we've seen the Sabres, they're an elite rush team, so good off the rush, generates so much fun offense, but we've seen those games where you play like a team like Carolina, oof, who's just great at killing those rush opportunities. Yeah. Like when you don't have that forechecking element to your team, there's really nothing you can do. I mean, the Sabres were sitting back, regrouping, trying to hit long-range passes, and Carolina just sitting back, intercepting them, counterattacking, and scoring goals. So when you can add that forechecking element, or that just kill plays quickly and turn it up ice and catch them off guard element, that's what the Sabres need to do to take the next step. And I think Stillman and Greenway have the skill sets to fulfill those roles.
Absolutely. I think there is a bigger emphasis on being able to forecheck and cycle, just because I think it was Dominic Moore last night mentioned that 60% of the Sabres, of all Sabres goals, come on the rush. And then you have to remember, like, power play goals too. I mean, some of them may come off the rush, but most of them are in the half court offense there, or half ice offense. I don't know why I always say half court, but that's a lot, man. Like, that's a lot of goals off the rush, and teams are like, okay, we shut that down, and there's a pretty good chance we're going to win this game. And like, certain teams try to and suck at it, and then there's teams like Boston, Carolina, the Islanders, in a sense, that are good at actually shutting down those transition opportunities.
Seattle, New Jersey.
Yep.
Yeah. Teams and like the Sabres can't just, it seems like they can't beat those teams.
Yeah. Basically, coaches are going into their locker room saying, don't turn this into a track meet, boys. And as long as you don't do that, you're probably going to win. And it's just, I mean, the Sabres, I don't want to start harping on all the pinching that they do, because it does create, it stops them. It stops at times, will stop the team from transitioning themselves. And like you're starting your defense in the offensive zone, essentially. But they basically say, like, look, be hard on the walls. Make sure you're not just coughing up the puck when during a breakout, and stifle their transition. And that's a very good start to defeating the Sabres. And teams have caught on to it, and some teams are better at actually executing it than others. So it's tough. I mean, they're still in kind of like a transition period too, where there's some players on the team where it's like, are you going to be on the team next year? Are you going to see a lot? If you are you going to see a lot of time? This is me transitioning to talking about some certain players. We'll start with someone good. I mean, there are obvious limitations, but I said I was going to be nicer to him. And frankly, Casey Mittelstadt's playing pretty well. You know, there are some issues. There's some turnovers here and there. There's some times where maybe his foot speed doesn't really help him out. But all in all, and as someone that's been very hard on him and very much trying to, like, cool it, like, it's not cool to just keep bashing the same dude all the time. And, like, I always really, like, try to tune in and watch exactly what he's doing. But I think he's doing better than some of the names we're about to talk about. And as a podcast, as a duo that hasn't been exactly nice to him, this is your opportunity, Walt, to say something nice about Casey Mittelstadt.
I mean, if you look right behind me, I got Mittelstadt World Juniors jersey. Yeah, yes, I mean, I think he's been a lot better recently. I don't think there's a single player in the Sabres that works harder out there than he does. And I think for him to continue to be an effective NHLer, I do think he has to work harder than anyone else, just due to his like a lack of dynamicism and foot speed. I think him by working harder kind of covers that up a little bit and turns him into an effective NHLer.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's really just been like kind of your definition of like a average to above, slightly above average NHLer, which is much better than we saw from him in the beginning of the year.
For sure.
And I think if you could get like average play out of him, I mean, that's honestly what you're looking for a lot of the times with a guy that you're going to throw on your third line. So I think they're getting exactly what they needed to see from him. I do think he's definitely, I mean, I do think he's putting his name in to be a guy that's here long term with the way he's been playing this season. I mean, there's always guys like him that kind of get pushed out of the lineup if like young guys come up or they try to make a change. I mean, Sabres are still very early on in what this team will look like in the future. Like, who knows if they have an underwhelming start? Maybe they try to shake things up a bit. I mean, but that's obviously years down the road. But I think just for this season and next season, I think he's a guy who's kind of played his name to be here the next few seasons.
Yeah, it was very much a rough start, and I'm sure he would probably admit it too, but I mean, as of recently, I think he's playing a lot better. And I mean, Granato obviously likes him. When he was struggling, Granato was still playing him. So, you know, I mean, Granato saw something, as he should, you know, he's the coach, but I think he also likes that, how do I want to phrase this? He really likes the work ethic that Mittelstadt brings, because like, you hate to say it, but Mittelstadt's like, he's not the youngest player on the team, man. Like, he's more part of the veteran group than the younger players, really. Like, he's older than a lot of the guys he's playing with. I mean, maybe I shouldn't say veteran,
And he's
but
been here a little while
he's
too.
been here a
I
while
mean, like,
too.
what, since
Yeah, I mean, he can show people the way.
2019, I think, or 2018, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, after his, he got that like brief stint after leaving Minnesota his freshman year. But yeah, I mean,
So
like,
5 years
yeah,
already
like,
since he was first signed in the organization. Pretty wild, honestly.
absolutely. They seem to like him in the locker room. He's friends with all the guys. And again, that shouldn't be the only reason you hold on to someone. We've said that before. Like, just because you're friends with guys in the locker room doesn't mean you should automatically be able to be on this roster. But I mean, there, he had, to me, like, if he can continue to play the way he's playing, yeah, absolutely. Like, I think he's earned himself a roster spot next season, depending on, you know, kind of how things, like you said, how things start off. Maybe they need to shake things up. Who knows if Kulich is really tearing it up, or Matt Savoy ends up making the team, whoever they might bring in over the off season. Because that's where again, we'll reiterate what we said on the last podcast. I personally believe that's where they, if they were going to make a big splash, it wasn't going to be at the trade deadline. It was going to be this summer, Thatcher Demko, which I don't see them trading Thatcher Demko, but I can dream. And so that's, look, and I'll be the first to admit I've been probably overly harsh on him, but you have to call a spade, and he's been playing well, and I think he's deserved. You can see with the way he's playing now, you can understand why Granato kept him in when he was struggling, because he's really turned the page, and hopefully he can continue that. I mean, he's in 63 games, he has 40 points, 10 goals, 30 assists. I mean, that's third liner production. Yeah, he's not a point per game player like we wanted him to be, but that's decent production, you know. And he has enough skill to really, as long as he meshes well with his teammates, or excuse me, his line mates, I think it's, you know, a good thing to maybe keep him in the lineup. So after being nice, now we get to be mean. Who do you want to start with? I'll let you take this. I'm not even gonna say names. Who do you want to maybe poke a couple holes in their game? Let's just say that.
I mean, I feel like Victor Olofsson,
Yeah.
especially after the past few games, has been a hot topic. I mean, he's someone like Casey Mittelstadt, start off with really bad numbers, but he really covered for a lot of parts of his game just with his finishing ability. But I mean, now that finishing ability has kind of dried up a bit, we're kind of seeing the holes in a guy's game. And I know, like, a lot of goals above replacement models, some of them do not use finishing as like kind of a measurement. I know Jay Fresh and Patrick Bacon, their model does use finishing, which is why someone like Victor Olofsson, if you ever happen to see like one of their charts or something on Twitter, why he's kind of above some Sabres that you wouldn't expect him to be above is because of his finishing ability. But that's, I think that's the question with these guys, is that like, how much should we value that ability. Like, obviously, a guy like Olsen could turn a goal that a lot of other guys wouldn't be able to turn into a goal. He could score from areas of ice where other guys can't score from. But if he's not able to get to those areas of ice consistently, if he's not doing much elsewhere, like, where do you value a guy like that? I feel like that's kind of where the question with him comes up. I mean, there's always guys like him in the NHL, and I feel like they're always the most difficult to evaluate because it's still a league where we really still look at box score stats. We really look at, oh, this guy's X amount of goals, but I just don't know with him, like, where do you value this guy?
You see, that's the thing. Like, at the end of the day, if you score more than your opponents, you're going to win. And so, for the most part, I mean, I don't want to make it that simplistic, but I mean, let's just go with the facts here. January 26th was the last time he scored, excuse me, and he scores in bunches. So, like, he scored on the 26th. He didn't score on the 24th, but he scored on the 23rd. He scored two on the 21st of January. Scored one on the 19th of January, and he scored on the 17th of January. Like 4 or 5 games in a, 4 games in a row. Then he took a game off, or I shouldn't say took a game off. Didn't score against St. Louis, and then scored again against Winnipeg, and that was his last goal on the 26th of January.
That's
How
wild.
willing are you to wait for him to find his scoring touch again? Because again, he scores in bunches, so who knows? Like he ends up scoring against Dallas tomorrow, and then who knows? He might score against the Rangers, might not score against the Leafs, which he actually doesn't like scoring against the Leafs. That is something he's good at. Then he'll score against the Capitals, maybe not score against the Flyers, and maybe not the Bruins, but then the Preds on the 21st of March. Like, that could happen, but he's also gone 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 games in a row without a goal. Look, scoring in the NHL, incredibly difficult, and that's why he is genuine. Like, he'll be valued no matter what because of his shot. But sorry, that's all he has. And I like Victor Olofsson. I think he's an awesome dude. His shot is super fun to watch. But at some point, you have to take stock and, like, look, this is our goal scorer. He's gotten better 5-on-5, but he doesn't do as much as maybe another player can. And he's not scoring. Like, you can keep trying to push him through and push him through. And hey, man, like, the next game you'll get one, and that will really open the floodgates. But what if it doesn't? What if it doesn't, man? Like, yes, he has 23 goals on the season. That's awesome. He has 9 assists. He has 32 points in 63 games. Like, it's just, again, 23 goals, really good. How many are on the power play? Give me a quick second. He has 5 power play goals of those 23, which.
How many empty netters does he have?
That's a
I feel
good
like he's.
question. I don't know how to pull up those stats immediately, but I feel like he is kind of like the empty net king for the Sabres. Like
Yeah.
that was like the Evander Kane special, I'm pretty sure, if I'm not mistaken. Like Evander Kane would
Oh,
just score
yeah.
like 17 goals in the empty net. But it's just, I like him. You know, I really do. He's a seventh round pick. It took him years and years and years of grinding to get over to the NHL, and then he was like shot out of a cannon. It was really awesome to watch him play. But I know, again, I don't take too much stock in this, but he is the worst plus minus on the team. He and Bryson, -21 for Olofsson, -20 for Bryson. Again, don't take too much stock into it. But the next closest is Krebs at -9. I mean, like. We know he's not a dynamic defensively at all. He's like the opposite of Rasmus Asplund, and Rasmus Asplund couldn't score to save his freaking life, but he could defend well. And Olofsson's kind of the same. Like he can score. Holy crap, he can score. He can beat goalies clean. He can beat NHL goalies, some of the best goalies in the world, clean. But he can't defend. He doesn't get to the. How often is he scoring those goals in front of the net where? They're probably hoping Jordan Greenway gets a bulk of his goals. Now he's a perimeter player. He's frankly, he does have some playmaking in him, but it's not enough to for him to produce assists. Not exactly a burner when it comes to his speed. There have been times where I've seen him make good defensive plays and use the speed he does have to get back and cover for those million 2-on-1s that I keep talking about. I really wish there were stats on like how many odd man rushes were given up like per team, like how many 2-on-1s, how many 3-on-2s, stuff, 3-on-1s, stuff like that. I don't even know if that's out there.
I wouldn't know. Yeah,
I'd be interested.
Probably lead the league in that category.
Exactly. But it's just, it's tough to tear down someone you genuinely like. But it's, I'm sorry, like he's phased himself out of this lineup. I'm sorry. I'm not willing to sit around and wait for maybe hopefully he'll start scoring again today. Like that is what you are on this team to do. And yeah, you have 23. That's great. But dude, you haven't scored since January 26th. That's tough. I'm getting to the point where I can't justify putting him in the lineup anymore. I can understand why they pulled out Peterka. He's been struggling recently. He's also a rookie. And I don't know. Frankly, for me, Peterka does more on the ice. When both guys aren't producing, Peterka does more on the ice. Plain and simple. If you want to keep Olofsson for your power play, fine. But let's not act like overall Olofsson's the better player than Peterka and should be seeing a bulk of games more than Peterka. That's my humble opinion. I don't like saying this. It's a lot easier to bash other players. I shouldn't say a lot easier. It's easier to bash other players. It's like, for example, Mittelstadt, because you were drafted so high and blah, blah, blah. You're supposed to be this, best prospect in hockey and look at you now kind of thing. But, kind of reverted to the old Kyle Opposo. Like, don't look at the contract or, like, don't look where he was drafted kind of thing. Just kind of, like, take him as he is now and assess from there, which it's taken me a little bit to get there. But I have with Mittelstadt. But I like Olofsson. It's just not working, man. Like, I hate to say it, too. I really do, because like that shot's lethal. And at the end of the day, goals are what matter most in hockey. But there's so much other parts of the game too, where it just lacks. And so, I mean, I'm not really saying anything new or exciting, but I mean, I feel like that's what people are kind of saying. Like Sabres fans like Victor Olofsson, as you should. Good kid, cool skill set that he has, but it's just not enough, frankly, for where this team is going. A couple years ago, when this team stank, it's like, yeah, sweet, this guy's filling the net. We're still losing 6-3. Woo. But, like, now it's the standard's been raised, and I think he's just kind of been phased out. So is there anything else that you wanted to mention on him before we start tearing down other players, unfortunately?
I mean, yeah, I still honestly just say he's such a hard player to value. I think the fact that he's like kind of the savior that people have a problem with now, I think is like just a great sign, just because Sabres have had guys that have done like everything he's done off the puck who just also weren't able to score at all. So the fact that we have a guy like this now who's able to score 23 goals before the season's even over, I feel like is definitely not an awful problem to have. So like,
no, that's true.
I don't know. Tough player to value. I mean, I feel like the hardest thing in valuing guys in hockey, well, I feel like the shooters are definitely guys that are always up there. It's just,
yeah,
do you measure how valuable they are? It's
like Patrick Laine. You know what I mean? Like some people are like, oh my God, he's awesome. And other people are like, this guy sucks, except when he's just shooting the puck from everywhere.
It's always that. I mean, I guess the downside is too, I mean, a lot of these guys are always taking shots from further out. I mean, really not Olofsson as much at 5-on-5, but guys like Laine. So that obviously drops like your expected goals and whatnot when you're on ice. And maybe it's a bad decision sometimes, but sometimes for the guys with shots like these, it's a good decision. I mean, it's kind of like why Ovechkin's never really been a fantastic analytics guy, because a lot of times he could just rip the puck from far out, but at the end of the day, he's still the greatest goal scorer ever. So for shooters, I mean, they've always had a tough time getting picked up in a lot of the public models we use. I mean, the guys that are beloved in the models a lot of people use are just like the Jeff Skinner, Brady Tkachuk, just throw everything possible at the net as close as you can and just drive up those numbers with volume. I feel like those are the guys that we see get valued. I mean, not that I'm comparing Olofsson to like Ovechkin or anything, but just the fact that shooters are always just so difficult to value, because, like, I mean, how much do you value a goal over everything else? I mean, how much do you value a goal over giving up goals against? It's just a tough one, and it's going to be interesting to see what their plans are with him, because really a theme with the guys they've been drafting recently is they could all shoot. I mean, from Oslin to Kulik to Rosane, I mean –
Yeah.
All these guys could shoot. Savoy could shoot.
Yeah.
Quinn.
He's on a heater.
Quinn could shoot. He's already on the team now. So, yeah, it's going to be – I think he's going to be a guy that eventually gets phased out. I think it's just a matter of when. And maybe that's why they're not scratching him now, so they could be like, oh, yeah, this guy's fine. Let's trade him in the offseason. We never scratched him once. He played every game he was healthy. So
that's true. I mean
– I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens with him.
We're officially at the point where we have to start nitpicking a little bit more, whereas like years past where it was just like, this guy's just not good. You're like, well, Olofsson's good, but there's like certain parts of his game that are really starting to kind of like show poorly and stuff like. So it is more nitpicking, which is a good, again, it's like a good problem to have. They have a lot of depth, and I mean, frankly, they're not going to bring up hot take. They're not bringing up Kulich this year. One, they only have a certain amount of call ups, and two, he's like still 18, if I'm not mistaken. Oh crap, let me fact check that actually. But
I will say, I think. It's going to become a lot more interesting if the Sabres are like completely out of it by like
the last 7 games. That's true.
Do you give Levi a few games? Do you give Ryan Johnson? I mean, he'll probably get some games if they're out of it. And Kulik, I mean, maybe – I know Alex Nylander, I'm not sure if it was his rookie or his post-draft year when he went straight to the AHL and they called him up to the NHL, but I know he got a few games.
Yeah.
Like towards the end of those seasons when the Sabres are out of it. So I do think he can get an opportunity there, but I also don't think the Sabres will be completely out of it with like 8 games left. I think they're going to do enough to hang around.
Yeah, do enough to hang around and make it competitive. And I don't really see, barring any injuries, I don't see too many like call-ups that are exciting. Sorry, Yuri Kulik or Kulich, whatever, one of the two. He's still 18, by the way. I'm sorry, Lucas Rusek, which I think Rusek can make the team out of camp next year. I am going to ask the question without giving any opinion myself. What do you think of Jacob Bryson and his future with the Sabres?
I think he's an interesting player because I think he's got a skill set that's kind of like half of a useful skill set of an NHLer. I think his in-zone defending a lot of times isn't the greatest. I mean, I think he's been getting extremely unlucky at times this year compared to previous seasons, especially defensively. So I think this season just hasn't been a good one for him. I do think he's going to phase out of this team eventually, especially as they continue to build depth on their defense. He's a fantastic skater. I think he's like a brilliant hockey player with the way he thinks the game. I just think there are some physical limitations there that you really have to be like that Jared Spurgeon type of just an elite defensive defenseman at killing plays as soon as they enter the zone in order to survive in the league as a defenseman like Bryson, who does not put up awesome offensive numbers. Because guy like Jared Spurgeon coming into the league, he was not someone that was really blowing up the stat sheets in the WHL. I mean, he was coming in as a pretty like underhyped prospect. He really built his game on his defense. And that's kind of, I mean, Bryson, I think he's kind of similar where he's just a very smart player, great skater. And his game's never really been too built upon his offensive production really at any level of his career as a prospect. So I think that's just a tough thing with guys like him is I think if you just don't have that Jared Spurgeon like type of elite defense on you, it's just hard for players that are like Bryson to have long-term careers. I mean, I do think he'll have a career where could be a depth defenseman on some other teams, but as a guy in your main top six, I think it's going to be tough.
It's a lot easier for fans to digest a forward getting knocked off the puck. That's like it when you see him get knocked, because like, look, he's not knocking too many guys off the puck. He still is able to make some plays where he body positioning and is able to rip pucks off sticks, but there's obviously physical limitations like you mentioned, and it makes it tough. I think he is, like you said, he has an interesting skill set. He's a good hockey player, no doubt in my mind, but it's been rough. There's been a lot of times I don't want to tear the guy down too much just because it seems like a bashing session at this point, but I think, like you said, he's phased himself kind of out of the lineup. think there's a specific reason. Like, they can't really decide between Bryson and Clegg, which Clegg kind of came up and took some games from him for sure. But I think that was a reason why they got Stillman. They're like, look, man, like, it, Bryson and Stillman are kind of, I wouldn't say polar opposites, but they're pretty far apart in their skill sets and what they bring. And I think Kevin Adams kind of realized, like, look, we have Clegg and Bryson that are a little bit smaller and, you know, at times are playing well, but sometimes it's not as good. I would definitely say Clegg's, you know, playing better than Bryson. That's just my personal opinion. But yeah, I can see why they brought in Stillman for that. For that reason, it's unfortunate that he was hurt, but there's some times against the Islanders last night where I saw and I was like, oh God, who just did that? And then you see it's 78 and you're like, ah, brother. And look, I mean, Olofsson, Bryson, like, they both know, like, their limitations. They know, like, when they don't make a good play or they've screwed up or, you know, they're in a slump or things aren't going well. Like, they know it, stuff like that. They don't need me to tell them. But look, I mean, this has been the discourse with Sabres fans and it's kind of warranted. You know, we're, again, like I've said, we're going to have a little bit more difficult conversations about players that we like, or, you know, people will disagree on a little bit more. You know, pretty much everyone except, you know, certain people that just love watching essentially UFC on skates, we're basically on board with Ristolainen and being just not good or not utilized properly and stuff like that. That was kind of universal, but we're getting to a point where we're going to have to be more nitpicky, and certain people are going, it's going to be a larger contingent of, you know, different ideas on certain players. But I think a lot of people are really starting to become wise of, yeah, Bryson and Olofsson are just kind of, it's I would say a net negative, especially with Olofsson. Like, a lot of people can forget defensive deficiencies if you're filling the net, or even Bryson, defensive deficiencies. If he was filling the net or collecting more points, in 50 games, he has one goal and not an 8 assists. Like, it's just...
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing with him is that, I feel exactly his numbers were last year, but he had, like, some of the least shot attempts out of any defenseman.
Yeah, really, yeah, I remember seeing that.
He doesn't really get the puck to dangerous areas either for a shot, which, for a guy with his skill set, you expect him to kind of be like a slippery.
Yeah, like slippery, like quick twitch. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt, but yeah, I mean, I totally get it.
No, I mean, yeah, that's kind of the thing with him is that he has all the skills to be that, but it's just not a part of his game, which is why I still think the guy has a future in the NHL, maybe not in Buffalo, but I think there's so many parts of his game that, like, a skills development coach or a head coach can maybe mold into something that turns into a fruitful career for Bryson. But I think really just where he's at in Buffalo right now, he's obviously struggling. I think the puck unluck this year has been real too. I mean, he's been getting, like, just so unlucky out there at times. I mean, it hasn't even just been bad defending. It's just that, like, whenever he messes up, the puck seems to end up in the back of the net. It's really not like that for every other guy. So I think that kind of just zooms in on his problems he's been having this year even more so. So I think it's a great problem to have, though, that, like, Bryson and Olofsson are the two guys
we're
talking about in regards to players you have concern with, because they were, like, usually, like, medium range on the list of Sabres with problems in previous seasons. Usually the guys with bigger issues had much bigger issues and really didn't have a skill set that provided anything of value. So the fact that we're talking about guys like Bryson and Olofsson who do have some skills that can provide value as being the guys with problems, I think that's a great problem to have. And I think it shows that the Sabres are finally becoming, like, just a real NHL team. Like, they have real NHL problems. They have real NHL hopes. Every year is not finishing in the bottom eight. Looking forward to the draft once January hits. I think we're finally seeing the Sabres move towards being a real NHL team again.
Absolutely. Speaking of unlucky, oh my God, Owen Power's had so many pucks just, like, deflect off of his big freaking feet. I feel so bad for the guy because, man, he's so good, dude. I mean, I remember he cut into the middle of the offensive zone, cuts into the middle of the ice, goes through the slot, and he ends up, like, dumping it off. But four guys on the Islanders stick check him, didn't affect him. And I think he almost did it twice. I think another time where he attacked into, like, the house, the high danger area. you know, guys were stick checking him and he was still able to get through. I mean, I'm just so excited for when he just builds that man strength where he's just, dude, I also feel bad. I don't think he's ever fought, but man, that reach, like if he gets that grown man strength and someone pisses him off, like, ooh, good luck. I don't want to be the one fighting that.
Yeah.
Guy.
I mean, I was thinking about, like playoff hockey in the future, like putting Dahlin out there for a half hour, Power out there for another half hour, for like a game that goes in overtime. That's going to be such a huge advantage to have. And I feel like once the Sabres kind of get better at that interconnectivity between their offense and defense, like they're just going to be an absolute bear of a matchup for any team, probably in just a few years, honestly, with
like
those two guys playing like the entire game.
I am genuinely concerned for the person that really, like for the first time, really gets under Power's skin, because like he's not really throwing his body out there too much. He's not really, you know, cross checking, slashing, all that stuff. But man, if someone does, like at some point it's going to happen where he, you know, scuffle or whatever. Someone just, you know, trying to, you know, give him a couple shots there, and it's just he's going to be like, no, let's go. I don't know. That's just what I was thinking about it yesterday. Just like, holy crap, like this guy's, he's freaking huge, man. And like, if you piss him off, it's over. Like it's, I mean, maybe not over because he doesn't have a ton of experience fighting, and please don't Riley Stillman it, but like, sorry, Riley, I didn't mean that. That's bad. That's on me, Riley. I'm sorry about that. It was a bad grip on the jersey. I'll give him that out. But no, when it comes to Power, it's just, especially like people were like, oh man, they're going to have like two number one D. What are they going to do? It's just like, no, you just have like two really solid, like defensive pairings, and you know, just make sure like they get people playing with Dahlin and Power that are effective. Samuelson was out. They stink without Samuelson. It's like they stink without the goathead jerseys. They stink without Samuelson. That's tough. And I assume he's going to be the long term partner for Dahlin. My last person I really wanted to talk about where it comes to people not being too happy with, which I think he's been playing better, but there's definitely been some times. Henry Okiharju. Because he's usually been in like the top four, either playing with Dahlin or Power. What are your thoughts on him before we wrap up for the day?
And yeah, I think he's been playing a lot better than he has in the beginning of the year and even last year. I think he's making a lot better decisions with the puck. I do think he's like a bit limited in terms of creativity of what he can do offensively. And I know he doesn't really bring like the same like tough defenseman that Samuelson brings, because Samuelson has somewhat similar limitations on offense, but he obviously brings like some different elements defensively. And I don't know, Okiharju, I mean, I think he's definitely an NHL defenseman. I think we're at the point where he's never going to turn into like that peak of what we thought his ceiling was when they first acquired him, but I do think he's a useful piece to have. He's someone I could see staying here a little bit longer term, just for the fact that if you could get him cost controlled, I think if you could fill out your defense with a guy like him on a cheaper contract, that's going to become a pretty big deal once you have to start paying guys, is to get a guy like Okiharju signed for cheap. So, I mean, if that's like an option, I could see him being here long term. Not a lot of flash to his game. He keeps it simple. I really don't have too many complaints with him this year compared to last season. I think he's been largely fine. And yeah, I mean, the fact that he's a right-handed shot too, I think also helps his case, because Sabres just really don't have a lot of those on their team or in their system right now. So I don't know. I think he's definitely a guy. And I think that's about the best definition of him. He's like pretty much like your average NHL defenseman.
I mean, I've said it before, I'll say it again. High floor, low ceiling. Like he's an NHL player, but that's like you said, he's a guy. Stop putting him in the top four. Find a good defensive partner for him to play with. Maybe it's Ryan Johnson, who knows, on the third pairing. And find someone else for Power. You know, go out and make that trade, or, you know, sign that free agent. He's just not a top four defenseman. And that does not mean that's not a bad thing. Having a good third pairing defenseman where you can, you know, kind of utilize him in certain situations, maybe he does a little penalty killing out there, that's a good thing. And they're, man.
I mean, I could see Ryan Johnson, honestly. I mean, for a guy with Power.
Yeah, I could. Well, I'm interested. That's interesting. We'll definitely get into that, especially during like the dog days of the summer where we're just like begging for stuff to do. Yeah, it's interesting. First, he's got a sign. And yes, all signs point to, yeah, Johnson will be here, but it's not confirmed until it's confirmed. Until the ink is dry on the paper, I'm not saying he's a sa like he's going to be on the Sabres, but I very much think he will be. But again, there is that opportunity where like he can walk. I don't know. I mean, I think the possibility of him signing is very high, but you never know. You never know. I mean, he's probably looking
Yeah.
at he could look at LA, the Kings, and be like, okay, decent team, making the playoffs. Like I can maybe see myself there, stuff like that. But the thing we were talking about is Anaheim, and good God, they stink, and they're gonna be not great for a while. And I think he's probably like, look, I mean, there's still a pathway to the NHL on the Sabres, and they're on the
They
rise
just lost
again.
Henry Thrun too, Anaheim. Another college guy that was going to sign with them wouldn't sign with Anaheim, and they traded him to his rights to San Jose, which I thought
Wow.
was interesting.
I mean, Anaheim's kind of a dumpster fire, and it doesn't seem like it's going to be turning around quickly. You know what I mean? Like it's
Yeah,
kind of like
they
the.
thought they'd be good this year.
Whoa, wait, Anaheim thought they were going to be good this year?
I mean, they signed Klingberg 1 year, $7 million deal. I don't know if
Yeah,
you
that was
do that if
weird.
you think you're going to be
Well,
horrible.
it's like Taylor Hall. When you signed him, they're like, this
Yeah.
doesn't mean we're going to the playoffs. This means a Stanley Cup. I still can't believe that. Oh my
Yeah.
God. Oh,
Well,
so bad.
I do think Anaheim thought they'd be what the Sabres are this year, but in the Western Conference, like a fun young team who's in the mix for a playoff spot. I don't know if they envision they'd be in the Bedard sweepstakes, honestly, but
Yeah, no. I'm just glad that we don't
they've
have to talk
looked
about the
off.
draft already. You know what I mean? Like, I'm
Yeah.
just so it's just refreshing. So yeah, I mean that's shout out Vinny Hinostroza. I'm just kind of going down the list of guys here. Shout out Vinny Hinostroza for, making the most of his opportunity and,
He just
Vibes
doesn't have
guy.
to do that drive to Rochester anymore. That's a
Dude, he was
brutal drive,
freaking.
especially in the winter.
Yeah, he was commuting too. It's not like he had a place in Rochester that he was staying or
Yeah.
something like that. That sucks, man. That's not easy. That's not fun. So shout out to him. Good for him. And
Yeah.
who else here am I looking at here? Jack Quinn. He's really, man, like he just keeps surprising me, and it's
Oh,
a good
he's been
thing.
awesome.
He's been
Yeah.
great. So shout out to him. He's such a,
Cutting the middle of the ice,
yeah,
ripping off shots.
dude, his ability to get to high danger areas is just awesome. And his
Yeah.
hockey sense is just continues to get better and better, and it was good to start with. Excuse
Yeah,
me.
I mean, I really just think like his development for a guy that when he was drafted didn't seem like there's much runway in his development because he was a guy that kind of came on the scene late. He was an
Yeah.
older prospect for his draft class. He didn't even have the best production on his own OHL team. The fact that he's able to kind of develop like he has, I think it's pretty remarkable. And I think a lot of people forget the season he had in the AHL last year was like absolutely insane.
Was
Like it was one of the
bonkers.
better,
It was so good.
yeah,
It was so
better
good.
AHL seasons you've ever seen for someone his age. I feel like he, yeah. So the fact that he's coming to the NHL now and doing what he is, I think he's going to be like, not really comparing skill set here, but in terms of like long-term impact, like a Pominville type of winger where he's just one of the better wingers in the NHL for a very long time.
Just real solid. Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely thought his skating was going to be more of an issue, and he's still kind of like his balance. He probably needs to work on that a little bit, which I'm sure he's well aware of, and that's going to be a point of emphasis. And he's still freaking good, and I personally believe his balance could be better. So like that's, he's only going up from here kind of thing. I mean, again, nitpicking big time. But yeah, like even his, I thought his skating was going to be more of a problem. It's just not. It's just not. It's like the Sam Reinhardt thing where people are like, he's slow. It's just like, yeah, but it still freaking works, man. So that's, hey,
Yeah.
shout out to him. Oh, one last thing. Massive in your face to all the people that were saying Cousins is overpaid. What do you, I mean, tell us you don't watch Sabres games without telling us you don't watch Sabres games. We all knew
Same
it.
thing with Tage this off season too. I mean,
Yeah.
a lot of people just don't watch the most fun team in the NHL, I guess.
Tage was a little bit different because it was a one-off, and I was even hesitant, like, can he do it again? Like, if he can't do this again, it's going to not look good. And then he freaking does it better, and I'm like, oh, well, go ahead and put away those fears.
Yeah, I mean, I was hesitant to an extent, but I feel like some of the reactions from, I'm not going to bring up Brat Pack here, but
oh god,
I feel like I have to, but it just like the overreactions are like, oh, so the worst contract in the NHL for a guy like Tage, who was so much fun last
Unicorn.
Season, had, yeah, I mean, there's really no other player like him, and I don't even think anyone envisioned this season he's having this year. I don't even think Tage envisioned this season, because if he did, he would have not have signed that contract.
Exactly.
This summer. He probably cost himself like $20 million at least. So
probably,
the
but
the fact that he's doing, so cool.
He was on Chicklets, which, like, nothing against the Chicklets guys. Really just only listen to them if, like, Sabres guys are on it. They were, like, teasing him about it, and he was just kind of like, yeah. Like, you could kind of tell he was just like, shoot, like, dang. Like, I could have gotten more money, but, God.
Negotiate restructuring deals on the next CBA or something.
Yeah, exactly. He'll be big in there. He'll be going to all the CBA meetings and stuff like that. And I'm like, why is Tage here? It's like, because he wants to restructure big time. I mean, Pasta just signed for how much or whatever, and they're neck and neck, and Pasta's a little bit older.
Tage is younger, too.
Yeah, so there you go, so. I mean, at least we ended it on a good note, giving some shout-outs to some players. And I mean, at the end of the day, my final thoughts is I wanted the Sabres to be in the race, but I didn't expect playoffs this year. That was like probably what I said in, you know, the first couple episodes of this season. And this is where they're at. I'll be disappointed. I'm not gonna say upset or angry. You know, maybe a little upset, but, you know, disappointed, upset, whatever you want to say, that they won't make the playoffs. If they don't, they still have a chance, but it's not looking as great after this past week. But I'm not going to be angry with them. You know, I'll be upset that I was like, dang, really could have gotten there. That would have been awesome. Like, great for the young players, great for the city of Buffalo. But, again, this is just the beginning, and we're going to be here riding this thing until the end. So I'm really excited about their future. Usually I give Walt the last word, so let me get out of the way. This has been the Sabermetrics podcast, hosted by the Charging Buffalo. Walt, what do you got for us?
My bold prediction is I think the Sabres win a cup before the Bills win a Super Bowl.
Oh, I'll definitely take that. I'll definitely take that. We'll catch you on the next one.